Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
We should maybe get to the point on what the hell Police Knots is.
Mankind creates its first space station. They decide to put five policemen up there. One of them is in an accident, never to be found again until his cryo ball, which was with him, is miraculously discovered.
It's all about how a guy from 2010 is struggling to adapt to the year 2040. So he remembers the good old days when everybody smoked cigarettes, like regular old cigarettes, and just puff, puff, puff. These jerk-offs are out here smoking non-combustible cigarettes like wieners.
That's a Kojima character detail right there.
Yeah.
If only he swallowed a carton of cigarettes in 2010 and then regurgitated it in 2045. Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
Some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source, the brain train, your knowledge, you'll lay maintained with a course aimed at colleges. To HG 101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes, the host of proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Ogre Hart and others, discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower.
Oh, I have a bad feeling about this.
Today, we are going to be ranking a substantial game. We are looking at Shadow of the Colossus. And this one was nominated to us, I believe, on Twitter by @thechaos, and that's chaos with a K, developed by SCE Japan Studio. And I've got like a also Team Ico, so I think it's a cooperative venture. I mean, it's published by Sony, and it's all internal Sony stuff, so that makes sense. And it was originally published on October 18th in 2005 for the PlayStation 2. So for anyone that played Shadow of the Colossus when it was new-ish, you are now old as hell. And today we're doing a little bit of a special thing. We're recording this live, and that doesn't make any difference to people listening to the podcast, but I thought I'd throw that out. And who's with me today to talk about Shadow of the Colossus?
I'm Slowbeef.
And I am Satanga.
And I don't know, like, this game is really cool. It's a later PlayStation game, like, later PlayStation 2 game. It was kind of... Is this, like, the last, like, really big, like, you know, like, the PlayStation 2 was somewhat on its way out, and this was kind of like the, like, oh, wow, this is this huge extravaganza of a title before things really started hyping up for the PlayStation 3?
I assume so, just from the technical marvel of it. So I played the PS4 remake. I streamed it, actually, and I was sort of surprised that people weren't quite sure right away which system I was playing it on, because this was on PS2 originally. It was ported to PS3, which I think only really means that like some of the physics, not the gameplay physics, but like some of that changes a little, but like the frame rate gets better, which we can talk about. And then the PS4 is actually like a very faithful remake. Like, there's no new, I think outside of one collectible thing, there's like no new real gameplay mechanics. Like, it plays exactly the same, you know,
that kind of thing. Is that one a full remake? Because I know there is like a proper all art redone remake. Is that out?
That's the one. PS4.
Okay. Because yeah. I've basically only played the PlayStation 2 game. That's the one that I played.
Yeah.
And I played it some time ago, but yeah.
It's faithful as hell, though. Like, if you look between the two versions, like, the PS4 version's, like, crisper, brighter, everything, but, like, they redid all the models, apparently. Yeah, it's all new assets, but it's, like, it looks really close to the original, but, like, in a good way, you know?
That's pretty important, because this one certainly was basically 100% just aesthetic. It was this really cool-ass-looking thing. Like, it's got this... It's a difficult to describe aesthetic, because it's kind of, like... Well, like Nordic-y fantasy, kind of little bit of like Ghibli Japanese sort of style, like Euro fantasy kind of look to it. Like it's lots of it's like styles all kind of crammed into each other, and it just feels quite distinctive when you see anything from Ico, the game that preceded this, or The Lost Guardian, which I don't actually know if that one's connected to this in any way, yeah. Yeah, yeah, so
it's kind of like Atlantean or maybe even a little Hylian, you could say, where it's like it is fantasy, but kind of like that squared off with glowing blue sort of thing. But also a very wide open, bleak kind of world.
The world in question is bereft of pretty much most other life. There are no towns or inns to sleep in, no shops to get inventory from, no other interactions, or even any other hazards, really. Well,
no NPCs, really.
Yeah, all it is just the Colossi in question, which for then was probably considered a bold move, because it might make people wonder, is half of the game missing here? Is there anything else, to it besides these bosses? And, well, not a lot. I think there is like a mine. I think there's some collecting on the side that's entirely optional, but.
You can hunt things like a jerk. That's the.
I think just a preview where I think this conversation goes. I'll tell you though, I never got the impression anything was missing.
Yeah.
I kind of got the impression, in fact, like, it was, like, oh, this was very, very, like, intentional and purposeful. Like, wait, do we have to go over the gameplay maybe a little bit, just for the folks at home?
You can start with the aesthetics in this case, because it pretty blatantly obvious when you boot up the game. You're like, whoa, okay, wow. It's intentionally stark, but that's because the way the game leads in, you have your mysterious guy, who I believe... they usually call him the Wanderer? Is that what they call him?
His name is Wander.
Okay.
The original original Japanese title is Wander and the Colossus.
Okay.
That sounds like a Ghibli title, indeed.
I can understand why they changed it. I love Japanese names when they're just so literal. It's just like this is the game. It's this guy in this place. It's like, yeah. Cool. I guess that's what it is. And he rides into what is clearly, I think, supposed to be a kind of, maybe this makes a tiny bit more sense from a Japanese perspective, but it's a very clearly like a sort of almost spiritual kind of area. It's almost feels like forbidden, like you're not supposed to be there.
Yeah.
Because it's just devoid of everything but, you know, the natural environment, and there's clearly some leftover things there, but nothing.
It's kind of Panzer Dragoon-y in the sense that it feels like something big and possibly bad happened and came and went, and this is like sort of what's left behind. Like there's big structures around, but there's a lot of like forest and natural stuff overgrowing it. I was kind of like sort of reminded of like the end of Final Fantasy VII in a way, you know, where it's like, you know. It's definitely meant to evoke something, if I could speak. Not good pronunciation, apparently. But,
yeah, like, if you've ever been to I actually went relatively recently, in the last couple of years, to Angkor Wat. I'm not trying to boast, it's just, like, I went to, like, old temple places, and you do get this, like, sense, like, when you see something that's, like, a grand empire that is just completely gone. And it does very successfully evoke that, just the sense of something really big was here, and now it's all gone, and you are an intruder. You are not supposed to be in this place. And
kind of like a sort of Ozymandias sort of look upon my works, ye mighty, and despair sort of feeling that it evokes.
Right.
Like, I guess it is in some way some variety of grand minimalism, if that's an oxymoron we could use to apply that sort of ambience.
it's very like interesting because like you'll go ride out to something and it's a big open field a la, oh god, I'm gonna embarrass myself. What's the big one in Ocarina of Time that everyone thinks about, like Hylian Field or Hyrule Field?
Yeah, Hyrule
I don't know. I'm not related to Zelda.
But yeah, so okay, you're big open field. You're riding on Agro, your giant horse, who is by the way enormous. And
I love how big Agro is. It's actually one of my favorite things about this game. Is they could have gone with a regular size horse, but they're like, no, this needs to be the biggest freaking horse that's ever existed.
Yeah, like Wander actually has to jump and kind of like grab on and climb a little to get on top of him every time.
Yeah, like
she's a man.
I really like this aspect of the horse because it actually kind of like sells like, okay, I can actually see this horse doing the things that it is being made to do. You know, like you ride the hell out of this horse across this huge landscape comparatively. And obviously when you're fighting Colossus, it's getting smacked around sometimes. It's doing like leaps and you're like, okay, this is clearly like a war horse. This is like a built for purpose horse. It's none of this skinny break a foot and then you have to, you know, take it out back kind of deal. It's a strong ass horse.
Maybe the size of the horse indicates something about the post-apocalyptic growth or whatever.
You're saying like everyone's like Wander is malnourished or something. He didn't get his full height going on.
One of the things is this game's so highly regarded, there's a lot of speculation about things like that, like who Wander was. Like, is this a special horse, in fact? Like, was he royalty or is he, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah, like this game's really low down in terms of like text and words and things.
Yeah.
There's only like really some dialogue and it's all delivered to you by a kind of creepy-ass voice thing that doesn't actually speak a language that you understand. It just gets translated on screen for you.
Also, like Panzer Dragoon, a made-up language, like a fake video game language.
Yeah, which is kind of cool because
Final Fantasy X. Nice.
It works for, you know, us. It's like just that neat kind of like, ooh, does he actually understand this? Or is he just kind of like understanding it because it's in his head? It's never especially clear like where the voice is coming from while you're playing the game for the most part.
So basically, you know, you're told to kill a different Colossus, there's 16 altogether, and every time you're going to kill one, Dorman, who's the voice, speaks to you, and it's a male actress and a female actress speaking together. Their timing's a little off, and there's some reverb in them. It's a really neat and kind of, maybe disturbing's not the right word, but kind of off-putting sort of.
Well, I mean, effect. They use the same technique for the many in System Shock, so that's always something that kind of throws you off.
Oh, interesting.
There was some other game that did that, I think relatively recently, where they did, they just had, like, male and female, like, voices kind of spliced together or just shifted randomly between the two. I can't remember.
Applied in Fallout with the Master, but I guess...
Yes, it is the Master as well, just kind of throws out, like, several of them.
Well, most of those voices were Jim Cummings speaking over himself, but nonetheless.
I like the voice because obviously it's kind of like, at first you think the voice is pretty helpful, but it's kind of like, well, this guy doesn't seem on the level.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, go murder everything. Okay.
Yeah, he kind of talks about, so you arrive in this world, I guess, what's interesting is it's very minimalist plot, and again, there's speculation, but you have a woman on your horse, you lay her on this altar in this place, the Shrine of Resurrection. And normally you'd say, well, that's your girlfriend, lover, whoever. But again, there's so much, like, the game, people have, like, analyzed this game so much, they're like, well, they never technically say that, you know? But it's, I think, like, fair to assume, possibly.
It's pretty fair, I think, to assume that, you know, she has a strong connection to Wander, so it's probably a partner.
And Dorman's like, if you want to bring her back to life, I can help you do that. It might not go well for you. Dorman kind of dances around it, you know? But we can do this spell, but to do it, you're going to have to defeat the Colossi, of which there are 16. Well, at first he's skeptical, but then he realizes, oh, you have the Ancient Sword. Well, maybe there's a shot at it. So the Ancient Sword is a thing you can hold up at any point in the game in R1, and if you're in sunlight, you get a direct line to your next objective.
So it is like a hot-cold beam, right? You actually have to kind of, you know, sword around to try and direct yourself.
Yeah, and as you get closer to the right spot, it, like, coalesces a bit, so it's not just, like, you're blindly moving around, it's, like, warmer, 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 there it is.
I believe you have if I remember correctly, you do have a map of some kind, and that kind of fills in a little bit, and...
It's a top-down illustrated map, but it's detailed enough that you can figure everything out. Like, there's no real ambiguity.
You do have to occasionally think a little bit, because you might be like, well, it says to go directly forward, but there's a wall here, so I guess I have to, you know, scoot around that somewhere, or maybe, you know, get up somehow, you know, go down, you know, like, there's... It does make it almost like a treasure hunt to find the Colossus in some cases, which is pretty cool.
It's kind of ironic, though, that these huge beasts actually take some effort to try and find.
Right.
You're supposed to be standing in their shadow. The game feels like it's lying to you on the offset, which is maybe another clue just from the title alone that something's not entirely right here. But
what was the thing I was going to say? I guess kind of brings you to the gameplay, right?
Yes.
Where you find a colossus, and typically it's this huge towering stone. Like, it almost, it's interesting because they kind of meld. Is it armor that they're wearing or part of their body, like, sticking out of them? And fur and blue circular eyes and horned giants, you know? And
they kind of have, like, they have a unified aesthetic, but they do all look quite different to each other.
Yes.
Like, they are distinctive.
Originally, there were going to be 48 colossus in the game.
Love that, because that's just like, you know, that was insane. Like, there was no freaking way they were making 40.
People went on the disc and they found unused colossi, which bring the number up to 24. But apparently, like, some of them were, like, too similar to others, so they pared it down to 16.
I am, like, a little disappointed, because I do know from reading some of that there were a couple that sounded interesting that were not ultimately included or finished, and to hear that the remake was, like, didn't include, like, a little bit of omake, a little bit of, like, bonus extra, like, just something, like, little bit to find, like, we finished a couple of colossi, they're not part of the plot, but you can go fight them. That would have been neat, I think.
I think the remake, though, is not, I don't think it's Team Ico, it's, like, Blue Point.
Yeah, so, it is a different team.
Yeah, because I think Team Ico did The Last Guardian, and then they're moving on to something else, so I don't know if this is Blue Point approaching them, like,
look forward to that in 2025.
Yeah, exactly. But
So you find the colossi, and they're really quite large. I really like that the first one you meet is, you're like, wow, that's pretty big. And they kind of just go up from there.
For the most part, but there are at least two that are only, like, the size of a really, really large dog something like that. Well, larger than
like
that.
Maybe like a bull and then, like, a small elephant, maybe.
Yeah.
I think, it's funny because trying to think of aesthetically, like, what this game reminded me of, like, God of War, I think, kind of comes to mind just in terms of how well this game does scale and how that game did that well, as you know.
They both released the same year on the PS2, no less.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this one, certainly when you weren't used to fighting enemies of this size, especially when you have, especially like the way that you fight them, which I think we should talk about. We gotta make sure we talk about this.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, most games, for big enemies, you would typically be further away. You would probably have ranged weaponry. You know, you just kind of like, they're big, but you just kind of take them out by, you know, standing back and having at them. Whereas this game does a complete opposite, very different. Instead, it's like, okay, well, what you need to do is physically climb up this guy and stab him. And it's just kind of like, wow. How do you even approach that?
Yeah, that's the ultimate challenge. You have a bow with infinite arrows and a sword, which you don't use like most game swords. Like, you sort of jab it in. You know, well, you know, we can get there, but, like, typically the colossi have these weak points on their bodies, and it's kind of a puzzle to figure out how to get there, because I think the first one usually, like, you just kind of jump and climb it, more or less, and it just gets you used to, you can hang on with R2, which is a button I remember really well from this, to grab onto the colossus, try to climb up, then when you get to the weak spot, you hold down square and release, just jab your sword into it. Arrows typically are more for puzzle solving or getting the colossus' attention. I don't think there's like any you can actually damage with the arrow,
which is fair enough, because as you did mention, the idea is that there is also this, like, there is a magic sword. It's a magic sword.
You can maybe stun them with the arrows, but ultimately you need to get in close to deal the damage.
And of course, the other one of the other important things is your grab button is not endless. You grab things, and if you're not leaning off or somehow like under duress while grabbing, your grab bar actually shrinks, and eventually you will just fall off, and this is quite panic-inducing, and can be part of the strategy of the game, and getting up the colossi is kind of grabbing, and then moving to spots where you're actually able to rest while physically on them as well, and it's pretty wild when you kind of climb up these guys.
It's interesting, because I feel like in another... this game is, like, really good cinematography, if you can imagine it. There's not... I mean, there were cutscenes, but when you're running across in the field, the camera will pan down into the left and, like, kind of go, like, parallel to you. And you still have full control over it if you don't like that, but it's really good at that sort of breathtaking kind of like scope of things, but then when you're actually on the Colossus too, it's really, really good. So if you stab the Colossus, it might try to shake you off. You'll hold down with R2 and the camera will kind of show you being flung around and like show the Colossus trying to do it. And it's not like a video game camera where you're always center, but you can always see what's going on. If it's ever confusing, it's because you're getting thrashed around, but you're like, you're not out of control or anything. It's typically kind of great, truthfully.
Like, I mean, that makes, yeah, like, so the camera kind of acts as almost a shaky cam kind of deal, where it just kind of, like, shoves itself up and down. It disorients you, the player, as well, when you're trying to grapple with
it. Yeah, I mean, in an era where the so-called shaky cam had become really ubiquitous and infamous in movies, despite this game rolling for a cinematic experience, it manages to make it work, trying to use that sort of camera. I don't want to call it a gimmick necessarily, but it does fit very well despite it, you know, people potentially being tired of it at the time. They make it work very well here.
I think one of the tricky things about talking about it is I feel like a lot of other games that might have tried to ape parts of Shadow of the Colossus, don't really quite, they kind of give it a bad name in that sense, like, because one of the things this game gets blamed for a little is that this is the advent of when games started to look very brown. Because they go for that, like, sort of...
this game specifically? Really? Not, like, well, Gears of War or something?
Well, Gears of War is, like, the Gears of War. One, right? Yeah, but, like, yeah, I guess, like... Before, yeah. Right. But, like, the thing is that this is like that on... It's not, like, all brown and monochromatic per se, but, like, it is definitely, like, smartly themed in terms of, like, how it's composed. Like, the composition's really well done, and it's all done intentionally, and it's supposed to feel, like, vast, but, you know, kind of distressing, or... You know what I mean? Like, it's meant to do that, more or less. Like,
yeah, like, it's going for that... It's going for realism, but it, like, it's not trying to be boring realism. It's just...
Right.
Like, it's like fantasy realism. It's supposed to kind of be just a little bit more real than real life, but, you know, in a way that just kind of sells this place as old and overgrown. Like, that's what it looks like. And, you know, why would there be bright neons everywhere? There wouldn't be. You ever been to, like a 10,000-year-old tomb that's full of, like, bright colors? No. Doesn't happen. Can't happen. And it does mean that when you have the little bursts of color in there, obviously the Colossi have got color in them. Some of them even have plants and stuff growing on them, just to kind of remind you that maybe you're being a jackass killing them all. there's also the little lizards and little like creatures that kind of run around the environment. And those kind of stand out sometimes when you're sort of looking around for those. And
very smart.
And you know, you're like, hey, lizard. And then you stop aggro and you just try and hit them with your bow, because if you kill enough lizards, you get a little bit more stamina, which is pretty much the only thing in the game, I think, that's kind of could constitute grinding or anything.
So you absolutely don't need to do it to finish the game. You can, and it's not even like one of those things where you're like terribly inconvenienced if you decide to just forego it altogether. There's shrines you can go to that you can pray at that are like little overworld checkpoints. The Colossi have checkpoints too, but... there's usually a blue-tailed lizard there. The blue-tailed lizards up your stamina. And there's also fruit that grows around that ups your HP max. I got 5 or 6 stamina ups because I started liking hunting the lizards. And I got, like, 2 fruit. And that said, like, again, like, some people are like, even, like, just, you can skip this altogether because it might even make the game a little easy.
And I get the kind of, like, sense behind it, because it's clever in that it gives people who really want to explore around and, like, find things, that's kind of, like, a cool little thing for them to do. Yeah. And if for some reason you're really struggling, it does give you, like, a tiny bit of leeway to, you know, boost your stats a bit. Because it can get pretty damn difficult, this one, especially if you don't know what you're doing, because each boss is a puzzle, essentially.
Yeah, and so, like, the way it works, too, is when you're climbing it, you have, like, kind of a grip meter, and it's pretty generous. But that said, since it's a puzzle, if you're having trouble figuring out exactly what to do, eventually Wander gets tired and he'll drop off. And depending on the boss, that can be a bit of a pain to get back on top of the boss, if that's what you're trying to do, or what have you.
I remember with some of the later bosses...
I also
bosses...
kind of find really...
I was just going to say, some of the later bosses can be quite a substantial platforming challenge, so when you're getting towards the top of those, and you're just like, oh god, if I fall, oh no, like, you know, it can get pretty rough.
Yeah, but I gotta say, for, like, an old 3D platformer kind of thing, not bad! Like,
no,
No, like, there's nothing finicky. There's, I mean, there's parts that are finicky, but usually the finicky things aren't too damning if you mess them up. But it's,
well, like, as you said, like, the game is kind of, the camera is kind of handcrafted to help not hinder you when you have these segments, which is something that a lot of games that ape this one don't get, because this game is not a, it's a big game in the sense that every single damn Colossus has had, like a month or two, it feels like, put into just that Colossus, like, handcrafting it to get it right, which is obviously what, like, very few games are gonna do that. They're gonna have a bunch of other stuff going on, whereas this one, there's just so much individual effort put into each encounter that it kind of can make up for the fact that it's gonna have a little bit of PS2-y kind of platformery stuff going on.
I just want to say that the Colossus, many of the Colossi do feel difficult, but for the most part, never unfair. Except I hated the 12th one, personally, but that was the one with the stones on the head in the water.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge fan of, but like a lot of people, it's funny because he's a fan favorite too. Well, I guess everybody has their own favorite, apparently. I didn't love him though. No, I agree. 13 was incredible.
Oh, like, yeah, the giant floating worm one.
That's
everyone loves.
Yes.
Yeah. Everyone loves that one. Because it kind of like captures everything that's good about this. It's got like quite a substantial puzzle. It's got the grabbing element to it, and it really fills in the environment, you know, because this is not, you're soaring around the environment at the same time, and you're, you know, this is really like impressive and cool, because it's, you're not even like stuck on the ground like you are for a lot of the other ones. You're now just like, wow, you can actually grab onto this and it just flies around this like landscape as you try and murder it. And it's also one of the ones that is probably one of the like grimmer moments to an extent, I think. Like the game, because of the direction that it's going in, sometimes like some of them you feel bad for killing the Colossi, and sometimes you're just like, eh, whatever, I killed it, I win.
There's like one very aggressive Colossus, but a lot of times they're just kind of lumbering around, and they only really bother you once you like distract. You know what I mean? Like once you get their attention or what have you.
Yeah, especially the early ones are very clearly like intended to just be hanging out, because of course they are. Why would they? They're just living in their Colossi house, and so what are they doing? They're just hanging out.
I think, you know what's interesting I find, too, for a game that's like, you talk about in a puzzle game, and that these Colossi are very kind of slow and lumbering, it's really tense. Like, intense is maybe the wrong adjective, but, like, there are points where your grip gauge is, like, lowering, the Colossus is thrashing, and you're like, oh my god, I don't know what's gonna happen if I'm gonna, like, drop off or what have you, you know? Or the third Colossus has, like, a big sword thing, like, a big overhand swing, and you know you're supposed to bait him into that, but when it's coming down, you have this really, like, clenched moment of, oh, this looks like it's gonna be so painful, you know?
I mean, the game, you know, it says exactly what it is on the tin. You're fighting these Colossi, and never once does the game let you forget the scale of them. Even when you're fighting the two relatively small ones, it is, like, I almost want to call it a perpetual David versus Goliath sort of feel, except for all the, you know, shady implications of what you're doing and all that are all subversive and whatnot.
What I think's cool, and I think you're kind of getting on that, is the idea that, you know, a lot of games, especially at the time, because obviously this one influenced people afterwards, but at the time, very much like, you know, power fantasy. This game's not a power fantasy, and it never gives you those enemies that are just like, haha, we're kind of weak and you can beat us. It never does that.
No.
Every time you show up to a fight, you're like, all right, here I go. And it's like, oh, okay, it's a giant flying space worm. All right, well, I'm dead, I guess. Like, you can't beat, like, the most basic enemies are huge. And then you have to solve a puzzle as well. And it can be really difficult. And I did want to mention, you've got the ability to call your horse. I love that. You know, like, it's one of my favorite things. It's just, you either get knocked off your horse or you get knocked off a Colossi and you're like, aggro, come on, buddy, come on! Because the Colossi is, like, coming at you and it's huge and you're running your tiny little wanderer legs off and this giant, like, creature is coming at you and you're screaming for your horse and then he swoops in and she swoops in and just, like, jump! All right, I'm away! Woohoo! And you're just, like, smacking her, like, a little bit just to get her to run faster because you're like, it's still coming, we have to get out of the way. And it's, like, these really energetic moments between you know, when you've got these, like, fights, which are super intense, super, you know, very, like, high pressure, high energy. And then afterwards, and this, the game's, like, brilliant, like, I guess, like, pacing, is then it just goes completely dead. Like, it's just dead quiet. It's like, yeah. All right, well, guess I gotta go murder someone
and,
else.
Yeah, and, like, you have these, like, you know, it's funny, because you're in this giant thing, and you're, like, kind of stabbing them with your sword, like a downhand stab the way you would do with a knife, let's say, you know? Like a, yeah, but, like, the final hit is done in kind of slow motion, and even though this thing is so many times the size of you, it's, like, just really brutal in a way, because it's, like, slowly inserting it into usually its head or something, you know? And this is, like, the final blow that...
Kind of reminds me of what Robert De Niro said in The Deer Hunter about how you should only take one shot to kill them and, like, not let them suffer or whatever. And I guess that's sort of the feeling I'm getting with these majestic creatures. Like, occasionally, like you said, I don't feel bad for as bad as I could for killing them. But, you know, for the most part, the game does a pretty good job of, like... stepping you into a box that you don't want to fit into, it's hard to describe, really.
Because basically, it's very hard to describe. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, you don't know the motivations, as we said, like, you don't know the motivations of Wanderer. So you're like, is this good? Am I a good person? I don't know.
Right.
Obviously, the game constantly cuts to the dudes on the horses, and they seem to be riding with some urgency to stop you. And you're like,
That's, there's like a cutscene with that, right? But even then, that's still not, like, it's never clear until...
No, you don't know what's, like, what are they doing? Like, maybe they're coming to help. You don't know, because you're there, you've arrived, and you don't seem to really have any sense of urgency as, you know, the Wanderer or the voice, Dorgan or Doran or whatever, never says, you gotta hurry and do it. Like, no, it never says that. It just says, okay, well, find the next one, go ahead, do it. But yeah, like...
Point of order, how much should we spoil about the ending, if anything?
I've said that we don't want to spoil the whole game, because it is quite neato.
I think maybe if, like, toward the end, if ever we want to give a spoiler warning or something. I don't know that we necessarily need to, though, because I think, like, you know, I guess, like, for one thing, Dorman says right at the beginning, like, this might not, you know, you have the feeling there's something going on that's not quite right. And even though the Colossi, they look like monsters. They don't look.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's really interesting how they do this, how they make you feel bad for these giant monstrosities, you know, and how you can have these really cool, like, set pieces and stuff. But, you know, but yeah, like, you feel like something's going wrong. Like, are we the baddies? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Am I the bad guy here? Like, what's going on?
But, I love that, because it's, you know, you have, like, you know, this is not a game which levels any, like, I'll say, like, false moral choice on you. It doesn't kind of slip in, like, oh, you're the bad guy, or you should have done something. No, it's like, the game's like, play out the game. Play out the story. Let's see where this is going, because that's what you do. You know, there's no... It's not trying to, like, catch you out with, like, ah-ha-ha-ha-ha. Like, no, it's just...
One thing worth mentioning, it's a linear game. Like, you can explore the world at your leisure, but you have to fight the Colossi in order. And if you, like, try to go to, like, ahead or sequence break, like, they just won't activate. Or there's things in the environment that don't let you get there, but even in the cases where you can, like, you can't fight Colossus 4 until you've beaten 1, 2, and 3.
I'll say it's fair enough, because for the most part, they, as you said, they do kind of amp up in difficulty. Like, the first couple are relatively, you know, doable. They kind of teach you separate, like, skills and how the game kind of will work, and so you can kind of piece together what you're supposed to do for the later bosses as they get more complicated. The game does throw you a lot of help. Dorman basically kind of sits there bored. I know it's like an abstract voice that's just kind of hanging out, but kind of like starts off with extraordinarily cryptic hints and then gets quite direct from what I remember. Like, eventually he basically is just like, to kill this Colossi, you gotta do this and that and that. Now just do it. Hurry up. I'm sick of watching you fail.
One or two clues. I don't know if it's a translation thing or what, but they're so obtuse that they're almost like outright. Like one I could even just tell you verbatim, and it's not even a spoiler. It's like,
go ahead.
Use the earth against this Colossus, or even this Colossus will fall to the mighty earth. And you're like, oh, I guess I have to use like a cave or a rock or something. And it's not that at all. And when you discover what it is, you're like, I kind of still don't really see it, like, where you were going with that.
Yeah,
like, maybe sort of.
Yeah, if I would have to levy any faults against this game, there are a few sort of Sierra adventure game moments here and there with some of the Colossi that, I guess some people like to spend several hours trying to figure out a good puzzle. Me, I admit, I am impatient. I respect that this game is slow paced as it is, but there were a few I did feel really frustrated on. Again, Colossus 12 especially was just a real hecking pain in the arse, and the clue I kept getting wasn't really all that helpful as I remember. And
nah.
Dorman said that like 10 or 12 times over.
Yeah, you might get sick of the clues when you're stuck, because you're just like, shut up, I'm figuring it out, leave me alone.
He's saying, yeah, 12 was a little odd.
I find that interesting, and obviously your toolkit doesn't really change, and yet some of them can be genuinely obtuse, which is a little bit, almost feels like a contradiction, because you don't have that many tools, but...
It's crazy, right? It's kind of cool that way, in that, like, all you have is the bow and the sword, you know? But I want to make mention, too, that I think a moment for me, which is Colossus 5, which is a flying Colossus, which... You know you're going to get on top of him. You know you're going to go for a ride. And I'd even seen, I think, part of it on YouTube once. But when I did it for the first time, I only played this for the first time, like this week. It's just really jaw-dropping when that happened. Like, they're really great at the camera work. And again, that this was on PS2 is nuts, because when you grab onto the Colossus and you're in the air, the camera shows you the level you were just on. Like, they're not cheating or anything. They're like, no, you're high up now, you know? Hurtling through the fucking air, and Wander hanging on is like flailing in the wind and stuff, and it's this really like tense sort of moment, because then also to get your stamina back you have to like stand up and not grip him, which like it's like every Colossus that is like the most like tense thing, because it's like I'm gonna get knocked off and I'm gonna have to climb up again. But yeah, in that case you're really high up really fast. It's just really good.
I know this is totally undercutting the intended mood of the game, but for a few of the Colossi, 13 especially, it feels like something by Metallica should be playing while I'm trying to keep stability and, right along at this incredible pace here. Like, Creeping Death, for example, that'd be a great song to set the 13th one to. But
Tenga, thank you for reminding me the music is fucking great as well.
Ko Otani, yes. I know he composed the soundtrack to one of my personal favorite Godzilla films. He's also a film composer, and the title of which is really ridiculous. He's also been involved in Gundam and the Heisei Gamera trilogy. Actually, I guess he is primarily a film composer, but somehow they managed to get his Otani's push for Shadow of the Colossus, and there's some pretty impressive stuff, to say the least.
All right.
And that also makes good sense, because it is a cinematic game. It clearly wants to be quite cinematic, which is pretty cool. And the only thing is, we haven't super well mentioned it, but I gotta tell you, the PlayStation 2 version is choppy ass. I'm sorry, everybody, but it is, the original game really ultimately does struggle. We certainly tolerated it when it was new, and we thought that the game was still awesome. But it was quite possible for this game to drop into kind of, not quite the single digits of frame rates, though it did that occasionally, but this one, you could definitely see that it was pushing the PlayStation too far, and then even further, and it definitely kind of had a struggle. Like, I remember when I was playing this game, back when, there were times where I'd be like, okay, I'm actually going to aim the camera over here. I'm just going to look away from this, because if I keep looking at that, it's going to crash the frame rate for another couple of seconds. So I'm just going to let that process and come back to this. It's great that this game is ported to the PS3, and the PS4 version certainly sounds great. But it is something that's worth keeping in mind, that if you think, ooh, I'm going to play the original PlayStation 2 version, watch out, because they were quite happy to sacrifice the frame rate to make it look awesome. It does.
To be fair, there's kind of no need. Well, you have to play it on a PlayStation 2, 3, or 4. But there's kind of no need to go back to 2 unless you want to just see what it's like, because 4 is right on the PlayStation Store. You know what I mean?
They're pretty easy to get.
Yeah, that's the easiest one to get. And I think 3 you could probably buy too.
I suspect so. The PlayStation 3 store is still around. You could go there and buy things if you want. I do think that we do have to rank things on our show, and
yes.
I think we're getting close to that, especially since we are
I got a story for you that might lead into ranking, and I think we might.
I hope so.
I do. You might have heard of this very infamous sort of case where Roger Ebert, the film critic, said that games were not art. I won't go into the whole story, but I actually like the story quite a bit. I could, but the point is that he ultimately conceded, not in a great way, because his concession blog post after a lot of people yelled at him on the internet was, "Okay, kids, you can play on my lawn," which was basically, you all keep telling me to play this one game, and that'll change my mind. I'm actually not willing to play a video game to go into this. Therefore, I'm just going to backtrack and forget I said anything. You know, so okay, not great. But the game then he displayed at the end was, this is the one game everyone sent me to try to change my mind that games were art, and it was Shadow of the Colossus. So the only reason I bring that up is I think this game is held in extremely high regard, and it's kind of considered like cream of the crop, I think.
I mean, this one's certainly, when it comes to games, and if you want to talk about, you know, museums and art museums and curation and that kind of thing, often if games get into museums, they're usually historical precedent or in some sort of game exhibition. This is one of those games, especially when it was at the time, because, you know, we've got lots of art games now that are clearly going for just purely artistic endeavor. But this one feels like you could just dump this in, like, an art gallery and be like, yeah, this is the Shadow of Colossus. Like, you don't have to...
Yeah.
You don't have to preface it with, like, it's a game that's odd or anything. It's just like, no, it does a really good job of kind of marrying what it wants to do, because it's full of the loneliness, it's full of this kind of, like, sense of, like, I don't know, like, struggle in, like, what you're doing. Like, it's just really, it's really well put together, both mechanically and by just kind of holding back it in terms of how it delivers its story. Like, it doesn't go too far, it doesn't feel the need to explain itself, which I love. Like, I mean, could you imagine, like, this game if it did the, like, a very typical sort of JRPG thing where it had, like, hours and hours of just nonsensical, like, text? You'd be like, oh, God, what have they done?
Yeah.
But I really respect the restraint. Like, that's impressive.
It's exactly, yeah, I think someone, just a friend of mine described it as, it's, like, almost exactly as long as it needs to be.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. All right, one other thing that's interesting, too, I'll just mention, is it almost feels, like, peerless in a way, or maybe peerless isn't quite the right word, but, like, there's not a lot of imitators of it, you know? And I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, I mean, I don't think it's because people thought, oh, this game sucks, I don't want to make another Shadow of the Colossus, but it's almost like that, I think people kind of recognize that that's a bit of a feat.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, a lack of imitation almost feels like a mark of respect in this case, that no one wants to try and replicate something as artistic as it's been, because they know that, you know, they're going to be written off as imitators, and it would just kind of be a disrespect to the original property in question. I mean, this feels at least like, to me, a game that others can respect for what it does and for what it is, and just, you know, don't even step on the property, because, like, the drive for most things in games is to sort of create imitators, so, like how FPSs were called Doom clones for the longest time. So that nothing's really been cloned of this is very unique, and I almost want to say a high mark of gratitude for what the game is.
Well, I think what you've got is you kind of got also like two very distinct like paths from this game. One is after this game came out, there are so many early like 360 games that are like, look at our big enemies. Like, oh, there's so many. You know, Lost Planet, Bullet Witch, Other, but no, like, there's, like, this clear, like, immediate, like, follow-up where a ton of games went, all right, let's make big enemies, and clearly they were just seeing that you could actually do huge scale and do it well, so they kind of injected that into their games. Didn't always work, but I gotta say, like, Lost Planet actually feels kind of like a very deliberate response to this, like, that whole, like, all the bosses are giant, and you get in, like, robots and stuff and shoot them in, like, a slow, deliberate kind of mechanical game. I think Lost Planet's actually pretty similar to this one. Please tell me it's called Lost Planet, the Capcom game set on like Ice Planet.
Lost Planet.
Thank goodness. I thought maybe I'd just go on and like, oh, it's actually called something completely
different. I'm wondering if we should factor anything about Monster Hunter in here, because that's the only.
And you know, you clearly got Monster Hunter. I think that's clearly got elements of it. Dragon's Dogma, of course, is quite close in a lot of ways. The other thing was, I think the quiet, contemplative exploration in this game set off a lot of fires with certain people and certain developers who just went, oh crap, you can make a game that is just kind of like heavy on just exploration and just kind of seeing your environments and going through places. Like, this game doesn't quite beat out like a bunch of sandbox games, but it does kind of have this slight sandboxness to it, that it's just kind of like the act of exploring a world with not a high level of direction is actually kind of fun as long as you make the world relatively interesting. And in that way, I think that you find that, like, the dreaded walking sim as a genre title, I don't know, that's terrible. It needs a better name. Still needs a better name. Calling them runabouts. Runarounds, you know, it's, yeah, so you got these, and these games, clearly owe this sort of, like, oh, actually, you don't need to do all this stuff, like, you can actually break the Colossus killing part out of this game, and it's still really neat, and I like that about it, too, like, the world is fun to explore, even without doing anything else, like, that's a pretty high praise, for right. a game. We gotta rank it, I'm just jumping straight to 59, and the reason I'm doing that is that's Zone of the Enders, the second runner.
I had a ranking. You just jumped right in front of me, and that, I did. I'm completely rejecting that ranking.
Okay, well, is yours better? I hope it is.
Yeah, I'm going number one above Tetris.
Number one?
I'm serious. Absolutely serious.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Why would you do this? You know, like, we're live.
I closed chat. I don't even want to know what people think about it. I'll tell you why. I think it's singular.
Okay.
No, I mean, and I'll tell you, I mean, I'll make the argument. I'm not, you know, we're not going to fight till like 3 a.m. on this, but like, I will say, I think it's a singular vision. It's not iterative, like a lot of these games on this list. It's not like Tetris in that it's a eureka moment thing that you code in a weekend and realize you've done something great almost by accident. This was something that people thought about and worked on, and not a huge team either. And they had this vision for it, and they realized it from start to finish.
Oh,
that's right. I'm Gauntlet's yeah. Gone. What's up?
Oh, God, it's like 40 degrees in this room, and I think it just went to, like, 50. Seriously, it's hot here, by the way. I'm in Australia where the current temperature is, like, 40 degrees. I'm dying. So whatever you say is whatever you say, and I guess I agree. I don't
disagree. All right, no, if you hate it, that's fine. You can hate it.
I don't disagree that it does actually have to... It does have to go high. Let's, I don't know, I know people would agree, some people. Let's step it down a tiny bit. Let's just at least I actually would prefer it. I actually do like it more than Super Mario 64. But the way our list works, we do have to determine stuff like influence as well. Sometimes when it gets this high, and do you think that we can credit it as kind of just a did it hit that hard? Because obviously, like, you know, games like Super Mario 64...
If you think it doesn't, that's okay.
No, I mean, I...
You don't have to ask me for permission, Cal, you know? If you wanna
I do!
Okay.
Because we're streaming this, so this is on your streaming as well, so, you know,
fuck them. They're all... The people in chat are like, no, you're crazy. Well, they didn't say that, but...
Actually, they're not. Some of them are like, oh, he's got some valid points.
I'll tell you too. We have a Discord chat, obviously, and I saw a couple people mention like, they, you know, felt like this. They certainly didn't agree with this spot or whatever. So I had to come heavy. So you're right that influence is important. But again, the reason I cited that one story is because this is a game that people, even people outside of gaming, I'd say this is a head turner for them. I think Tetris is where it is too, because gamers and non gamers alike love Tetris. And before I played Shadow of the Colossus, I would definitely have kept Tetris to that number one spot. But now I'm starting to think about it. Is this a head turner?
It's worth mentioning that you did play this one recently.
I did.
You went in and you played it recently. That's right. At it. You haven't played it 10 years ago and have stumbled in drunkenly. It's still the best game ever.
No nostalgia factor either. This is double-edged sword. That's right. I haven't had time to think of it over it either, but you know.
Stanger, are you huffing and puffing because it's above Doom? Is that where this is coming out from?
I can look down and be hurt too, my friend. I'm telling you, you know.
Like stuff like number 11 is Tomb Raider, and that's kind of like the closest thing I think on the list to this game, just because that one is doing the cinematic thing, it's doing the exploration. Tomb Raider has elements of this, you know. It's probably the only genuinely comparable point here in terms of what it's trying to do as a game. I think because this one strikes that very careful balance between the story and the game as it's told. Like, there's a term that everyone likes to throw around, like ludonarrative dissonance and things. This game's actual presentation and the whole game, it all fits together. It never kind of breaks, it never kind of breaks your suspension of disbelief. It's got almost no UI. It's just everything is as it is presented, and you have cutscenes, but they never kind of go, oh, why did that happen? That's silly. Like, everything works together, and I really like that. Like, it never really breaks itself apart. And that's cool, and that's something that very few games can kind of make that claim and be this good.
It's tricky, right? Because, like, yeah, it's yeah. You know, because you talk about Katamari Damacy, right? And that's kind of similar. Like, if you're talking about a singular vision again, but again, easy is not the right term. It's certainly not. But it is kind of like a one-trick pony in that sense. I love Katamari Damacy, but I'm saying this is still, like, one big cohesive package.
Yeah. No, I...
Listen, I get it. You're not going to offend me if you think I'm full of shit. Let me know. I'm not leaving.
I don't think
I'm going to leave. I'm going to leave the podcast though if you don't make this number one.
Oh well, that's fair enough. I would too. that's the hardball line. Like, if you do this, I'm out. Like,
okay.
I think, like, the thing about Katamari Damacy is it brought joy to everyone that played it. I don't know. Does this one? Does it do that? I don't know. It makes you think, I guess. I hate to use the term, it makes you think.
Well, it's like,
that's such an empty phrase, but yeah.
Right?
It does. Like, we haven't mentioned the ending, because we're not going to, because if you have somehow avoided this game, you should probably just play it. Come on, you go play it. It's worth it. But there, you know, this game does manage to crank your sort of, your heart dials and levers and things, and really just, it finds a way, even with its minimalism, to kind of have a strong and compelling kind of hold over you, which is also great. Like, it doesn't need to do all that much to make you go, oh, well, now I'm pretty sad. That sucks. And it's kind of cool. Like, it's also, it's a melancholy game. It is quite, I like that word. So we gotta look at it. Probably shouldn't have agreed to even be on this damn recording. Now I gotta rank Shadow of the Colossus. What was I thinking?
Yeah, it seems like we're damned if we do, damned if we don't, no matter where.
Oh, you are, no matter what, right?
No, there's no, like, every game in our top 50 is, like, we place it, and then one person will be, it's too low, and someone else will be like, well, that's way too high. Whatever.
The two Bandersnatch timelines here, right? No, I'm kidding. All right, the two timelines here are, I get this thing to number one, right? And you both agree, and then everyone's like, Slobby's a friggin' idiot. How dare you put that above whatever, Tetris or Doom or whatever, and you guys should never have him on again. Or, we put this at number 59, Cal is murdered in the street, like a dog, and we're at his funeral. I mean, I don't
this
really...
This is a hardball negotiation. murdered in the street like
No, but you know what I mean, right? If, like, somebody... If you put it down to 59, then people are going, I can't believe you put Shadow of the Colossus.
I do think... No, we've got to start low and go up. And by low, 59 is not low. But I got to say, number 17 is Resident Evil 4, which is my personal game of the millennium. And I love that game a lot. Mm-hmm. It'd be hard-pressed to sell Shadow of the Colossus over that to me. But I always did want to put a game above Tetris, and that's why I'm struggling here. So I'm like, ooh, what if we put a game above Tetris?
If you're gonna you're not going to get an opportunity to put another game above Tetris.
I know, but I also think
I almost feel like we should call on our boss Xerxes to see what he would think.
Our boss Xerxes is all like, I'm just going to go play Smash Brothers. See
our
you later.
Our boss doesn't pay us.
Yeah.
Nah, he's great. He's going to edit this and be so mad. All right, so we got... I'm actually not sure. Okay, so Doom, pretty great, pretty much the entire FPS genre. I can't say this game is the entire anything genre. It's just really freaking great. I struggle to put it quite as high as those. I do think it should go above combat. I'm happy to put it above combat. I think that 8 is, I'll give you 8 as the floor now. I'm putting 8 as the floor. Combat's great, but whatever. Xerxes spent like an hour talking about that, and I never want to look at combat again in my entire life. So we're also almost an hour on this one, by the way. So go us. Tanga, I know you're like in an RN, which is fair enough. We got Doom, and we got this.
I was thinking place it at 5 between Pokemon and SMB3.
Okay.
As a possibility.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting that.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess the question is, what we have to think about is, do you think that if you had to, because obviously when people were trying to declare video games art to a guy who did not believe that video games could be art, despite having previously talked about a game and described it as art, I don't know quite what happened there, but, that's true. Robert Ebert reviewed a game and said it was excellent and said it was art, but, that's for a number of time. But this was the game. They didn't say, you know, Tetris is a video game in like the truest sense of the term. Like,
absolutely.
There's no superfluous anything. Absolutely. This is video game. And then on the other hand, I guess we have this, which is kind of the art entry for video games, right? So this is like the video games can aspire to be, I don't want to say more than video games, because that's lame. Like video games are great. That's why we've got this stupid show.
But, you know, and like Tetris and Katamari Damacy, and I guess Super Mario, like Shadow of the Colossus, even though it's artistic or what have you, it could only be a game to really sell itself, I think. You know what I mean? Like, you couldn't really, I don't think, make this, like, a movie or something like that. Like, it needs that interaction. It needs you holding on to the Colossus. It needs you doing those things and feeling that scale, not just seeing it.
Like, could you, like, imagine, like, this game as a movie if you had these huge intervals where you just watch Wanderer, like, ride around on a horse for, like, 20 minutes? Like, you wouldn't watch that. You'd be like, oh, no.
No.
No, this is not what I paid for here. I'll be back in 30 minutes when he stabs a guy.
Our floor is top 5, right?
Okay.
Okay, so here's another thing I'll say in its favor. Super Mario 3, it is iterative. It did build upon Mario 1, Mario 2, or... Yeah,
I'm willing to stomp on Super Mario Bros. 3, all right?
Okay.
I think it's fantastic, but I do agree. It is still...
I love it,
It's, it's really fantastic.
You know what I mean? Like, there's no way you're in the top. This list, like, if you're top 100, you're in good company. Top five is
it's really hot in here, and I'm sweating. But I'm not just sweating because I'm sweating because, like, I love all of these. You know, I don't hate any of these games. Why would I hate them? This is crazy. So every game we put it above, it's just like, oh, God. But I like that one, too. Pokemon Red and Blue, which, for those listening, it's number 4. And the reason Pokemon Red and Blue is this high is we kind of just placed we got nominated Pokemon Red and Blue, and we just kind of put it as Pokemon, the franchise that continues to this day and remains hugely popular, which is kind of insane. And that's kind of why Pokemon is up here.
Yeah.
It's not strictly speaking Pokemon Red and Blue, the kind of buggy game that they made in, like, 1990.
Few of these are up here due to sort of grandfather clauses, I want to say, that they...
Well, without Pokemon Red and Blue, you have, like, none of the Pokemon franchise. There's no doubt about that. That game, you know, how it works.
Yeah, and the whole trading aspect and everything, like, is a very creative, like, kind of thing, you know?
There's a lot of elements to it that kind of work together. But it does have a lame-ass video game story. I mean, there is that aspect to it.
Yeah. And Katamari Damacy, you know, I like it. It's a bit. I love it, really, but it is a bit one trick, right? Like, you know what you're getting. It's a fun little thing. It's very cute. It's got a nice style to it. It makes you happy to play. I don't know though. This is still like I think I want to go above Katamari here. But you can fight me. You can bring me back down.
I'm thinking about it because Katamari Damacy is amazing. And there's no. I gotta like. This is like we're talking like hair's breadths here. Like this is like. There is literally nothing in this. We are just trying to, like, flip between two things that are basically exactly as good.
Okay! All right, then. I'm going for Tetris. Here it is. You needed Tetris effect and VR and musical kind of shit to make you revisit Tetris. Shadow of the Colossus, Tetris. Just fresh proto paint. I know, I love Tetris.
You gotta calm down.
Settle down.
I'll put Tetris effect above Tetris. I'll do it.
God, what is this mutated into? I can't tell where we're going with this.
This is high-stakes negotiation, motherfuckers.
Super Mario 64 and Katamari Damacy. Mm. And I want to say, like, Katamari Damacy is not a game I would give to someone to prove that video games can be art. It's to just, like, prove that they're really fun and amazing. Yeah. And but that's not necessarily... like, a bad thing. And I think that's important is both Katamari Damacy and Shadow of the Colossus are games that nobody else really wants to tackle, you know? Katamari Damacy is so good that there's exactly one sequel that's halfway decent, and then everything else is just not as good because it's so right. Shadow of the Colossus didn't even bother with a proper sequel because you can't do that.
I'll add one asterisk, just again, not part of this conversation, but Donut Country looks like it's kind of Donut County, I think maybe is looks like it's
cutesy little game where you like that's
just
things.
Yeah, but that's just neither here or there.
Yeah, I mean, like, I know Nobby Boy exists, but let's not talk about Nobby Boy.
I haven't played it actually, but
I tried to play.
I'm gonna die.
All right, look. Shadow of the Colossus, thrilling moments, tense moments, sad moments. Funny, cute moments. You can pet aggro if you like.
All right, that's pretty good. Can you?
Can.
That's really good.
You can put away your sword, pet aggro. It does nothing.
That's pretty good. All right, I'll tell you what. The fact that you can pet aggro will put it above Katamari Damacy. And that is because that is a touch that the game didn't have to do in any way, shape, or form. And definitely a criteria. If you can pet animals in your game, it is a substantially better game than any game that doesn't do that. Which is why Nier is so low on the list. You know there are dogs in Nier and you can't pet them? I couldn't believe that. Unbelievable. Dang. Don't even bother. Nier, not even once. Maybe once. Well, maybe twice.
Not even once. You can pet them like by rubbing your hand on the glass of the screen.
Yeah, like, and then you gotta clean the screen. It's messy. Alright, so we got Super Mario 64.
It is iterative.
Is it? Iterative! Right. Iterative. Mm-hmm. It's iterative on what?
Stop. Tomb Raider, 3D platforming. All right.
My head hurts.
All right. Mario 64. I mean, it's really good. I have to give it that. I mean, I like Mario Galaxy 2 also.
We don't have Mario Galaxy yet.
I know we don't yet. That's where we're getting, right? It's funny too because I actually personally like the Ray above 60. Actually, 64 is good.
In my opinion, it's between Super Mario 64 above or below. I can't give you Tetris, and the reason I can't do that is I can't even articulate that other than if I had to remove one game from existence, it probably wouldn't be Tetris.
I gotta tell you, I will agree with you. I think that Tetris passes the mom test, which, like, I know people would argue on how important that is, but I think it is something to be said. If you're talking about, like, the best game of all time, that even people who are not into gaming or wouldn't care about this list could get into it, you know, that kind of thing. So Mario 64, huh? What do I gotta do to get you above Mario 64? What do I gotta do to put
this is going to go on forever. Oh my god.
Xerxes, who edits this, is going to kill, hopefully, well,
I'll take the bullet. I'm the least essential member here.
Oh, we are above an hour. Shit.
Yes! But this is Shadow of the Colossus, and it's going to go apparently at number 2 or 3, so you can, you know, that's how it is. And live studio audience, which is rare, so gotta give the, gotta make it worthwhile. Alright. Yep.
Hold on, though. If this ends up at number 2, you'll be happy with that, right, Cal? Like, I don't want to have influences with a live studio audience here.
No. I think Shadow of the Colossus. Look, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I don't care that much for Super Mario 64.
Okay. I love Super Mario 64. I have plenty of things that I like about Super Mario 64. But I was more jealous of
Super Mario 64 because I owned like a PlayStation throughout the 90s, and I kind of got like Super Mario 64, like, you know, in the like sometime in the 2000s. Like, I was like, this is all right. That's all right. I'm pretty good. So I'm sitting there playing Gex 3D, and I'm like, freaking assholes in their freaking Super Mario 64. I'm playing Gex, no draw distance.
Let me bring things to a bit of full circle. I want to say it was partly my fault that Super Mario 64 was ranked as highly as it was, if my memory is correct. So I'm going to try and make good and agree that Shadow of the Colossus should go at number 2. And just sort of, you know, everyone has their cake and eat it.
The new floor. All right. So Tenga, I need you to betray Cal and put it above Tetris. You and me, buddy. Let's do it. We can outnumber them.
This is some Game of Thrones shit here. We've got one too.
It's right. There's only 3 of us. But come on, like you cannot hand like this game to someone who's not kind of prepared for it. They won't get it. They will not be able to get through it. It just it's too much, you know.
I mean, now, so now we're going back to the mom test scenario. You mean like,
I love the mom test because it works for Tetris exclusively in this one specific circumstance.
I might have been hoisted by my own petard bringing it up, I'll grant you.
But you know, like, I don't know how many times you can put yourself through Shadow of the Colossus, whereas Tetris will probably... It's hard to best Tetris because of how primal it is as an experience. Like, blocks fall, you make lines, and you keep playing it for 50 years. Shadow of the Colossus doesn't have that because of what it is, which is, it's a story game, right? It is phenomenal, but ultimately, if I had to explain video games to aliens, it wouldn't be this game. It would definitely not. I could probably show them Tetris, and they would probably get it. Whereas this game, you know, is too much required of buy-in. It's a game for people that really want to get invested in a game. And feel, you know, deep in their hearts, I can't even think anymore. You guys sweated me out. I'm done.
I mean, I think, yeah. I mean, in terms of how accessible it is to everyone, I mean, this the global audience, yeah. I think my only argument there is, like, Tetris, again, it's pretty simple, Tetris. It's something that Pajanov really had a eureka moment. I mean, I don't know the story of it, but I would imagine being the eureka moment for it. He was just like, oh, wait a sec, what if we did this? It's a puzzle game, it can only be a video game, it must be interactive, I'll grant you all of that. But this was something that somebody had the idea for, and it took them months. And they originally even had a grander idea, and it got pared down to what it is now. It's pretty much the sculpture kind of thing. The sort of, this was hewn out of a brick of marble, and its faults became part of the final product. You know? I'll put that as eloquently as I can. This is science. I will concede that, you know. So
yeah, that's the criteria of the show, was science.
I mean, you okay. know. All right. Look, I mean, yeah.
I'm willing to do it. We've done one recently, but I'm willing to do it in the name of the show. I'm willing to do the worst coin flip that's ever happened.
Oh my god!
Jesus, I'm willing to do it. Jesus, we've gotten this far. Xerxes is going to murder you if it's heads, just so you know.
Well,
who said it's going to be heads? Do you guys want me to do the coin toss, or do you... Someone else
no,
want to do it?
Some not it. Coin. I have my...
I think I might... I have a coin upstairs if you want me to wait to run
no,
get
please
it.
Please
but...
don't. Right. Please don't go upstairs. All right.
Okay.
Let me get a nice... Yeah, the coin never goes where it goes. All right. So I've got my Australian 50 cent... coin. It's one of my favorites because it's got the Australian emblem, so it's got a kangaroo and an emu on it. I don't have one with a horse. Actually, do I have coins with a horse in it? No. Alright, we don't have any horses. We're
you're
going
stalling,
with
kid. Get on with it.
I am! Okay, here we go. Alright. Do you want to pick which thing puts it above? Is it heads or tails?
Heads. Heads, it's number one. Tails, number two.
Heads, it's number one. All right, hopefully I can land this on my table so you can hear it land. I'm just tossing the coin between my hands so I don't know which one is the starting one. Okay. Here we go. Crap, it fell behind my...
For God's sakes!
You gotta put that...
I'm sorry, everyone! Right? That didn't do it on purpose! All right, give me a sec. I have to put
This is a nightmare.
This is awesome. Come
yes,
on.
Yes, an awesome nightmare is what it is.
Oh, thank God. It was Tails.
Oh.
Okay.
It's Tails.
What?
It's not the Queen's okay. head. It's Tails. It landed on my carpet on Tails. It's Tails.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. It's ranked. We're done. Number two, above Super Mario 64, Shadow of Colossus, second greatest game of all time, Hardcore Gaming 101, top 47,858 games of all time. Thank you for joining us, Slow Beef, and literally killing me, and also getting me killed later. It's done. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this. I'm sorry to everyone who thinks that our rankings are terribly wrong, because they are,
yep.
but you have to believe in them.
They're not. That's they're science. The you yep. can't argue science. I'm sorry.
I know, and yet every day, people at Xerxes, and he doesn't care at all.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HD Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.